Hello there, welcome to this week's edition of The Front Page, and the observant among you will notice that this week we are not based in Racing Post London HQ. In fact, we've come not too far away. We've come to Epsom Training Centre, Racecourse, Racing Heartland, because this is day three of this year's National Racehorse Week, a 9-week celebration of the racehorse. And today, 3 yards are open in Epsom. We are at one of them. This is Downs House Stables, one of the most historic yards in the sport. Behind me, and not too far away at all, we're at the 11 furlong pole of the Derby. The racecourse is just behind us. This is a place that once upon a time the mighty Eclipse was trained here. More recently, horses like Be Friendly and Running Stag. And these days, Downs House Stables is home to George Baker, who's been doing tremendous things for Epsom. And today he's doing a tremendous thing because he's invited into his yard lots of people who will be coming around as the day develops, experiencing a racing yard, getting to know some racehorses, as are we. I am Lee Mottishead. I'm joined here at Downs House by my colleagues Liam Head and James Stevens. Good morning, boys. Liam, first of all, your first time here, but you're clearly a regular in a racing yard in Lambourne. This sort of environment, it's a great thing to bring people into who don't necessarily know the sport.
No, 100%, and I think, you know, it's designed to showcase what goes on behind the scenes at a racing yard, and it gives people the opportunity who might not see these things on a day-to-day basis of what goes on and how things operate. It's the perfect opportunity to get up close to these equine stars, you know, see how they're treated. And I mean, they are treated like royalty, aren't they? And it shows you more than just what you might see on the TV at the races. So it's a great opportunity to bring new people into the sport. It's what we need for the future of the sport, really. And hopefully it can drum up interest and it can go from strength to strength.
James, obviously, we're recording this early morning, so the very first people are starting to make their way around the yard. But as the day goes on, it will become increasingly busy, and that will be repeated all across the country.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's an amazing thing. We talk a lot about roots into the sport, and for a lot of people, the actual horse themselves is a massive draw. You know, the idea of how these horses live their lives is a fascination towards how these horses that you'll see turning up to the racecourse for your day out, how they actually live, what their lives are like. I think a lot of people are naturally curious about this, and the amazing thing about this yard and the history behind it is we're not far from central London here, so there'll be a lot of people who perhaps might not have a close affiliation with racing, i.e. being from a rural background because they're in the big city, they're able to come down and have an experience, and hopefully it does open the door to not just going racing and experiencing it, but seeing racing as a sport and how it all works.
The great thing about this place today is that anyone who comes here, anyone who's booked into to have a look around George's yard or Jim's or Pat's, can hang around because we've got racing taking place today at Epsom. It's the Amateur Riders Derby. Patrick Mullins, this year's Grand National winning rider, he's taking part in that race today. But the activity this morning is all built around National Racehorse Week. I think actually that started really out of a Racing Post column that was penned by the trainer Richard Phillips, whose brainchild this very much is. It's then been taken on by Great British Racing, and in its first 4 years, because we're now in year five, it's been a massive success, guys. Some of the numbers are really impressive. 64,000 people have taken up places offered to go around yards during National Racehorse Week. There have been additionally another 190 community events that have brought 10,000 more people into racing, if you like. The idea obviously is that people who maybe don't have a huge knowledge or interest of racing get to experience the sport, get to meet the stars of the sport, who are the horses. That has worked. 64% of the people who've come along to National Racehorse Week events were newcomers to the sport. 32%, so they had no knowledge really of racing whatsoever. 80% of those have walked away with a more favourable view of racehorse care. 95% have had a more favourable view of racing. So, you know, it works. We know this works. Great job done by Great British Racing. Great job done by Richard Phillips. And great jobs done too, Liam, by all the trainers who open their yard. So this is day three this year of a 9-day run that coincides the first time with the school summer holidays. One of your great allies in the sport, Nicky Henderson, is yet again opening his doors this week, and that will be massively popular.
It will, and just before we get, you know, you mentioned those trainers, I think that the big change that has been seen in a more positive light is the fact that the weeks obviously changed, or the 9-day spells changed. Obviously, we normally, in the past, we've seen National Racehorse Week take place in September time, but the fact that it's moved into the school holidays, obviously with it being a bank holiday today, I think it's massive, and it will hopefully, I mean, you only have to see, like, for example, today here at George Baker's yard, it's a sellout.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of other yards in Lambourne, there's Edward Smith Osborne, his yard's a sellout. He got 20-25 people last year. He's doubled that this year, completely sold out. And as you mentioned, Seven Barrows, Nicky Henderson, is always a popular event whenever he opens his doors to the historic Seven Barrows. A unique opportunity to get up close and personal with these stars, you know, the likes of Constitution Hill, John Bonsagino, and obviously Nicky Henderson has seen it all and done the lot. So it's a great insight to how, you know, everything works. Obviously every yard will operate differently, but to get in and amongst, you know, these stars is what we need for the future of the sport. You know, it's clear to see, and even if that small first experience of being in the sport is seeing a yard, it might take you then to a race day, and then, you know, who knows where people will go from there. So it's fantastic, it really is.
Yeah, and Liam, just picking on that point that Liam made, James, obviously it is all about the horse this week. It's called National Racehorse Week. It's about the racehorse, and we know that the sport, quite rightly, has to work to maintain its social license, that phrase that we hear all the time, and partly because modern society doesn't have the same direct connection with horses that would have been the case once upon a time. So to bring people into a yard so they can see how a yard works, they can see how well the horses are looked after, how well they're cared for, it's a massively important thing.
It is. One of the big challenges racing has, albeit there's quite a few out there, is there's near enough 5 million people go racing every year. Racing's got so much terrestrial TV coverage, but yet the knowledge of racehorses, of jockeys, compared to other sports, is pretty poor. So if need to look at as many ways as you can go, right, how can we get people who have some sort of interest, enough of interest to pay money to go racing or to experience a day at the races, how can we try and convert them into bigger, more active fans of the sport, and different ways you can do that. And actually being behind the scenes is one of those ways. I mean, I remember when I was a lot younger, there was a training day at the Millennium Stadium with Wales when they actually had some really good players, and the whole stadium was sort of packed because everyone was fascinated to see, oh, what sort of drills do they do? What do they do behind the scenes? There is an allure to sort of how things work that you don't necessarily see, and I think this really plays into that. And there'll be lots of events where there's things like schooling shows and different trainers are putting on examples as to how they train the horses and sort of guidelines and learnings about what they do. So there's loads going on, loads in Cheltenham as well, not just Lambourne, and yep. The public are going to get to see the 2026 Gold Cup winner, the Jukebox Man, at Ben Pooling. So what's not to like?
Wasn't expecting a tip on this week's show, but you got one there from Mr.
We're
Stevens.
We're almost in September, Lee.
We're almost at the start of the jump season proper. Still very much in the heart of the flat season. We'll be talking and reflecting on the Ebor Festival in a few moments. Before we do that, let's go to the star of this week's show. It's George Baker. So George, thanks for inviting us in here today. First of all, please make an introduction.
Well, this is Calafrio. She's a cool filly. She's come down to us from Philip Kirby, who's a good mate of mine, and change of scenery. Hopefully we'll work the oracle on her, but she's a very sweet person. We haven't worked out yet whether she's a fast person, but she's a cool girl, and hopefully a bit of fun to be had in the months ahead.
She's an absolute sweetheart, and exactly the sort of reason why a day like this is important, bringing people into the yard. You've had about 80 people here today. They're starting to trickle away now, but so great for racing that people get to come in a place like this and meet these horses and see how well they're looked after. Well,
that is it, Lee. I mean, you know, the whole point of National Racehorse Week is to get people to yards like this up and down the country, I know most of my fellow trainers are throwing the doors wide open, because we all understand that getting new people into the sport is absolutely critical, but also getting people to understand how incredibly loved, cared for, and well looked after these horses are. They live in five-star luxury. There are a few headwinds against our sport at the moment, and this is an opportunity really to showcase how brilliant these equine athletes are, but also how brilliantly looked after they are by exceptional staff up and down the land. And the welfare of these horses is absolutely paramount, and we're incredibly lucky that the stable staff in this country and across these islands are just of the highest quality.
Absolutely. I mean, I live down the road in Ashes, so I'm basically a local person, and we live right next door to a major training centre, which Epsom still is, but lots of people here wouldn't really have a connection to the racing part of the town. They might come racing now and again, but they certainly won't get a chance to do something like this. But you're doing this today, Jim's doing it, Pat Phelan's open. Yeah. So you, Jim Ball, Pat Phelan, it's a great thing.
I think it's fantastic. And obviously, Richard Phillips' initiative five years ago, or what it was, what a cool idea. And it's wonderful that the industry really has embraced it. And it's not just racing yards, it's studs and rehabilitation centres, and just across the whole board. And I think just sort of opening people's eyes to the fact that this is a wonderful, wonderful sport, but there's a huge amount that goes on in the background. And I think days like this, maybe when people come racing and they see the horses walking around the paddock, if they come here on a day like this, it makes them understand the sort of the bigger picture and what goes on, and the hard work and the hours, the long, long hours through all weathers. But look, it's a privilege to be involved in this great sport, and it's a privilege to be able to show it off to people who perhaps don't know an awful lot about it, but hopefully will become more engaged because of days like this.
And George, this is an amazing facility. I mean, it looks brand new, because it basically is brand new. I mean, you moved in here in February to, as I said at the top of the program, an historic yard with an amazing history. Well, how have you found being based here?
Well, I think, driving across that race course every morning and thinking of all the great horses that have galloped up that hill, and we're standing here not more than a furlong away from the Derby start, and the barn over there is where Eclipse was housed in the late 18th century. So the history of the place is wonderful. For us, this is a huge opportunity, wonderful stables. The facilities here at Epsom are superb, the gallops are superb, and if we can just play a little bit in sort of rejuvenating the place as a major racing centre, because it's got everything, and all it needs is plenty of good horses, and hopefully this is one of them, and hopefully we can find a few more in the months ahead and the years ahead. But we're committed. We've got a wonderful landlord here, Mark Travers, who's incredibly excited about what he has created here, as are we. And look, it's if we can play, as I say, a little role in getting this place right back to where it was a few decades ago, it would be a great thrill.
Hear, hear to that. Well, thanks to George. He'll be very much in action as the day goes on here once racing starts at Epsom. He's got runners through the day. We're looking back now on racing that has taken place. I was very luckily at York for all 4 days of the Ebor Festival last week. It's always one of the real highlights of the British racing calendar. York do an amazing job, and they stage some incredible racing, and they certainly did last week. We're gonna have a canter through the main races now. And James, the Judnot International on Wednesday, I was expecting a really absorbing race given the small but select lineup that we had. What I wasn't expecting was to see another pacemaker, Beercastle, almost winning the race. He must have been 25 lengths clear as he turned for home. I know people around me watching it from the stands, we were saying three furlongs out, he's going to win. And it did look like he was going to win. In the end, Ombudsman, the horse he was pacemaking for, has actually won pretty easily. But goodness, that race up a lot of talking points.
Yeah, I think there is potentially a bit of a hangover from the Quirat Sussex Stakes. And it's going to happen again, and it didn't quite happen. Very muddling race to watch. We knew there was a pacemaker in there. It was quite obvious. They'd paid 80 grand to put a pacemaker in the race. But we were still really surprised by the result. If anything, you would say from a tactical point of view, that was perfect, because Trawlerman, it just all went wrong in the Eclipse. There wasn't enough pace. And also, I do just wonder whether a horse to really aim at perhaps might have suited him as well. So the idea of he's coming into straight, there is Beer Castle, that's who you need to beat, and the horse potentially that might have helped. I thought, look, I've been keen to take on this one. I thought, okay, he got his way at Royal Ascot. The three-year-olds would come for him and be better. So I was surprised. He was very good. I think the race was set up perfectly for him. That is the job of a pacemaker. They wanted to pay £80,000 to put him in the race to try and create the ideal race for him, and they've done it. No excuses. Very good performance. A few disappointments. I thought it was down on the sale. It would be lovely to see the Japanese horse run really well. It just didn't seem to go well for him at all.
But in some ways, he was the horse that caused the problems.
Yes, in many ways, yeah.
Because, you know, you had Beer Castle out in front of him going along at a fair old whack. Dan Underseal sat second, and his jockey, who of course hadn't ridden at Europe before, his mount was taking quite a hold, so he's trying to pull him back a little bit. The jockeys in behind are then waiting behind him, but of course they're waiting behind a jockey who doesn't really know the place. But I was saying to William Buick afterwards, he was making the point that you don't really want to be the one that goes in pursuit, you know, 6-7 furlongs out. So you're almost in a no-win situation.
Then this is what I mean, we talk jumps, we talk flat. What I love about flat racing is the tactical elements of it, because you mentioned you're having your first ride at York, you've got this horse who's come over, it's worth a lot of money, it's worth a lot of prestige. You are really thrown in the deep end when something like that happens. That's why those top jockeys, they really stand out, because they call under pressure. When that horse has gone that far clear, it's very easy for someone to go, when do I need to go here? What's going on? And that ice cool precision is what, I mean, and Buick, I would say, William Buick got that spot on. He knew he was going to come back. He didn't panic. It's very easy, and you see it a lot of time in, particularly in sort of handicap races and lower grade races, where jockeys get a bit panicked behind. They feel the urge to go a bit early, and in the final half furlong they just flatten out. But just staying cool, it's really what you can tell in these big races. Just the good jockeys, they don't get stuck in pockets, and they don't lose their patience, or they don't go too early. They know when to time, and they know exactly what they've got.
And ultimately, he's actually hosed up.
I mean, it's like we knew that there was a pacemaker, and it was made well clear before the race, and the fact that they flew the horse in to do the job. It's the manner of which the way he was so far ahead of the rest. It's almost to say, like, right, we know you're there to do a job, but I think it caught a few of the others in the field by surprise at how far ahead. They were 25 lengths at one point.
He's actually a good horse. He's trained by Andre Farber.
Yeah,
he's
a very good horse. And, you know, it was a very strange race to watch, because the camera was almost more focused on the horse at the front than the ones in behind. And you were thinking, right, well, obviously we've seen it, you know, in the Sussex Stakes that, you know, it went obviously Kirat went off and did the pacemaker, and obviously went on and won, and you thought, here we go again, it's going to happen again. But like James said, I think William Buick got it, the timings, to perfection. But the problem is with the pacemaker, when you see that far distance, if you're in the race, you're thinking, right, well, we need to make up the ground, when are we going to do that? And you don't want to go too early, because, you know, you'll blow out of steam and when you really need it. So it was a very, very strange watch, because I feel like, I mean, I was watching it from home. I feel like you're watching more about the horse that's 25 lengths ahead than you know, the big horses at the back, and you're thinking, right, well, who's going to go first and who's going to make that challenge? But in the end, I mean, from a tactical point of view, it was absolutely perfect for Godolphin, the way that it panned out, and the way that Ombudsman went on and won the way he did. But a very unusual watch.
Well, in terms of the unusual watch, I was talking to a colleague who was there as well at York on Wednesday. He was watching it by the rails, and he said there was a growing sense of unease as the pacemaker maintained this huge lead. And he thought there might well have been booing if Beer Castle had held on to win. There was controversy after the race as well. I wasn't expecting this one, but a bing bong caused quite a lot of raised eyebrows and raised voices too. So as we were all in the paddock winners enclosure after the race, William Buick had just weighed in, because they do that for the big races, for the races at York, just by the big winners podium, and then the jockey was off to get back into the weighing room. As William was walking back, across the public address system was an announcement that said, basically, there's objection. The clerk of the scales has lodged an objection. More details will follow in a moment. Now, of course, at that point, John Gosden, joint winning trainer of Ombudsman, he's having a coronary. He's thinking, what on earth happened? I spoke to William Buick. Even he didn't know whether it relates to him or not. 20 seconds or so later, there was a further announcement to say it relates to the horse who finished last, Darius. Now, this not hanging anyone out to dry here, you learn lessons from things. But surely in future, when that sort of announcement is made, it needs to include which horse it relates to, so that people aren't thinking, has this gone completely belly up?
Yeah, it very much sounds like that was made and they've gone, let's just try and rectify that quite quickly. Perhaps it's just a case of, okay, it's a busy Saturday, yeah. The world is literally watching this race at this point. If you're gonna hit the mic, just be perhaps a second check. I did see the reaction live. It was quite funny. Including some of the media people like yourselves who are scrambling, okay, we've got a real story here.
Well,
and then suddenly you're all disappointed, you know?
Well, I was talking to Aidan O'Brien at the time when this was all good. So when the announcement came, I'm talking to Aidan O'Brien, having decided not to talk to Ryan Moore, who I walked alongside for a second, said Ryan, and then I thought, there's a good time and a bad time. I was an absolute wuss. I let Ryan walk back into the weighing room. Aidan was in great order, though, given Delacroix had been disappointing. And so we heard this bing bong, and I'm saying to him, what's it about? Could it be William Buick? Aidan said, holy God, you better go and get to William. So I did. Yeah. Aidan didn't know either. Better day for Aidan on Thursday. So Wednesday wasn't a good day for Buddy Dodd. Delacroix disappointed. Aidan had four runners in the Great Voltigeur, including the Derby winner Lamborn. They finished fourth, fifth, sixth and seventh in the last four places. Pride of Arras won that one, really bounced back to form. But the Yorkshire Oaks on Thursday, only four runners, disappointing. Two of those four runners trained by Aidan O'Brien. One of them was the Dual Oaks winner, Minnie Hawk. And Liam, she did the job very efficiently indeed.
She did, and I think, you know, we've seen in the past with her, when she wins a race, she doesn't really sort of win them by a convincing amount of distance. But the way that she won that race last week was just so impressive. Opens up a lot of interesting options now for her, and you know, who knows how high she can scale. You know, it's fantastic to see. Obviously, yeah, like you said, very disappointing to have only four runners for a Group One, but you know, it was very, very good to see the manner of which she won that. It was a very good race, and it'd be interesting to see where she goes now, because obviously you've got, you know, the mention about the Ark, possibly the Breeders' Cup. Obviously, Aidan's got Whirly in that sort of same conversation, and you'd like, well, from his point of view, you can't see them running against each other.
No, for Michael Tabor.
Yeah, exactly.
Made that point. Went to Michael afterwards. His view was, if we get the sort of ground we normally get for an Ark, World for Longshaw, Mini Hawk for the Breeders' Cup, obviously that could flip around if we get a different 100%. Sort of conditions. But Michael wasn't at all keen to run them together.
No, 100%. So we'll be one to certainly follow for the next few weeks and months. She's just a star in the making, isn't she? But I must also, you know, touch on a strange. She's just such a lovely horse, isn't she? Mm. I mean, on, you know, finishing second, ran with absolute credit on ground that's probably a little bit too quick for her.
Yeah.
You know, we were sort of owing and ahhing all week to if she was going to run and take a chance. You know, she did. She performed well. But you'd like to think that there's a big one in her come the autumn on softer ground.
Well, that's certainly it. It's possible, isn't it, James? Mm. If we do get what we think of as normal October ground at Longshaw, that the Ark winner will have run in the Yorkshire Oaks, but not the winner, the second.
Possibly. I think you'd have to look at it in the way. I'm still looking Kalpana all the way.
Me too.
It's just on the trajectory. If it's all about one day, she's improving gradually and it's going to be geared towards Longshaw. I just think it's the most simple option. It's so like Blue Stocking last year. Yeah. It just screams it makes sense this also. It wins the Ark, Kalpana. So that's where I'm at. I mean, we mentioned four runners. I mean, we've almost got four runners circling us now, which is really good timing. We really thought it through. It's disappointing, and everyone is very quick to say, oh, it's a small field size, it's not good. The big issue we've got in in flat racing is that a lot of those middle distance fillies are trained by Aidan O'Brien.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of the best ones, and it just does work out that he doesn't want to run them all against each other. It's just the way it makes up.
He ran two, didn't he?
He did run two. There was a mile and a half listed race for fillies on the same card. You know, is that potentially a bit of a mix-up?
This week is not a racing politics show, but one thing that did get suggested to me more than once is maybe there needs to be an examination of the Group 1 entry system. Obviously, York this week pushed the entry date back for the Group 1 races to the start of July. Someone suggested to me that it was easy to get into a race, i.e. you didn't have to pay £40 supplementary fee. Some of the Gold Trust runners might have dropped into the Yorkshire Oaks, but then you got a problem with the Gold Trust Stakes. Anyway, Friday, Nunthorpe Stakes, Advance Australia Fair, Aspora. Great at Royal Ascot last year, hadn't won a race over here since then, but James, she did on Friday, and she was superb on Friday.
She was brilliant, and it was all to plan, wasn't it? She disappointed at Ascot, didn't go right at Goodwood, and the vibes were, okay, she's back, and she shot away. She's electric on her day. She's a very, very talented sprinter, and I thought she put the race to bed with ease. It's not the strongest division. It's not the strongest sprinting division. She was always the horse who had that top class form and could be a step above these. And it proved to be so. Disappointed with the two-year-olds, to be honest. I was expecting a lot better from Lady Man and Spicy Marg. The weight goes on from Kingsgate native. Asfura is a very talented horse, and if she goes to Ireland, which I expect she does for the Flying Five, she'd be tough to beat. But it's fair to say, once again, she's capitalised on not the strongest five furlong division, but let's have a moment at York. They're attracting these top horses from around the world. We'll have Australia watching on Friday to her. You'll have Japan watching on Wednesday. This is what it's all about, British flat racing. We've not got the great prize money that we have against the rest of the world. We know that. But to still be attracting all these absolute top class horses, getting the eyes of the world on our biggest race meetings, fantastic. And I have to say to York, fair play, because it used to be all Royal Ascot. The Ebor Festival is absolutely superb, and it's got the international recognition it deserves.
Yeah, it really, really was, as Joe said, a fantastic festival. Attendances were up throughout the week. I penned a column in today's Racing Post. You're talking about the value at York as well, and you'll see I write about a rhubarb and custard meal for it, which I've not done before in a column, but it was superb at £3.10. Liam, the Nunthorpe again, James talked about how great it was for York and how well done to getting that sort of horse, but a real brave and ballsy move by Henry Dwyer and the owners, because obviously last year went well. She won at Royal Ascot, then the campaign slightly tailed off. They didn't need to come back again this year with the expense involved in that, but they did. Hadn't gone amazingly well until Friday, but they retained their belief in her, particularly the strapper Chanel Ellis, who's just been a superb part of this journey. You know, so many plaudits to them.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, obviously she was, as far as fantastic at Royal Ascot last year, but we hadn't really seen her to that level until Friday. Like you said, huge credit and admiration for Henry Dwyer and his team for, you know, sticking at it, because as you said, she wasn't at her best at Goodwood, as we've seen. And a lot of people, you know, when there's a lot of money on the line, you know, you're taking a massive risk there in a massive race in you know, a track she's, you know, we don't know how she would have taken to it. So it was a huge risk, but that's the beauty of, as like James said, the international presence at these big meetings is what you want. So, you know, full credit to her team for doing the job they did. They got rewarded. They got the condition absolutely perfect. Like Henry Dwyer was saying that he wanted it to be as quick as it could be, and she pulled up in absolutely devastating fashion and got the recognition that she does deserve as an international star.
There was also an international presence in the race to which the Ebor meeting gets its name from, the Skiber Ebor on Saturday, although it wasn't quite as international as on Friday, because Willie Mullins won it for Ireland. It was an Irish dominated finish, as we've become used to in the Ebor. Liam, Ethical Diamond won it so easily. I mean, a race like the Ebor should not be won easily. But again, Willie, showing what a genius he is, sent a Royal Ascot winner over there and won it with so much respect.
Yeah, I mean, we were just joking about how we're not even in September yet and we're already hearing Willie Mullins winning a big big pot in Britain. I think we'll probably be getting used to that as the next few months go. But yeah, I mean, domination again. Obviously, Willie Mullins, he won the race last year with Vauban. So yeah, really impressive performance. And I was surprised at how well Ethical Diamond won that race. But it just shows you that when Willie Mullins has his eyes set on the prize, he's, you know, he's going to obviously go all guns blazing. Obviously, had a few others in the race as well. But that Irish domination, you know, Henry de Bromhead second and Aidan O'Ryan third. But it was great to see the race, you know, full.
Yeah, it only just filled last year.
Just filled. So it's always such a tricky puzzle to solve the Ebor. So it'll be interesting to see where Ethical Diamond goes next, because I don't think the Melbourne Cup now is...
No, exactly that. Yeah. So James, Liam mentioned Vauban, and actually went from the Lonsdale Cup to the Ebor. Ethical Diamond can't, because last year he had a screw inserted in the leg, which means he wouldn't comply with the strict racing Victoria protocols, which Willie is fine. Willie's among the European trainers, always been, you know, very supportive of what racing Victoria are doing. So can't go there, but there's surely more good races to be won with Ethical Diamond.
Yeah, definitely, and it's the same with Willie Mullins. He really is a dual purpose trainer, and I'm going to say something which we don't often say, but I think he's a little bit underrated this year.
Give over.
Because what he's achieving on the flat is quite incredible, because you think this is the Ebor, it is the second biggest meeting, perhaps. Maybe it's Goodwood, maybe it's York, whoever, you decide. The Ebor is the feature race.
Yeah.
He is winning these races against Godolphins, Coolmores, Waffnans, big spending operations. Ethical Diamond was a fairly ordinary flat horse.
Yeah.
Been bought, we don't know how much, but I can't imagine it's to the same sum that Waffnan would have been paying for some of theirs and Ammo Racing, and we know what the stallion costs of some of those top horses are. And he seems to be finding these horses who aren't particularly... You don't look at them in their early go, that's going to win an Ebor. Their horses have shown some potential, and they are being transformed and being created better and better and better. And time after time, he's winning at Royal Ascot, he's winning at the Ebor Festival, he's winning these big races on the flat, without having the same sort of backing of these big, powerful flat owners and breeders and stuff. Yeah. So it's a hell of an achievement, and I think that sometimes we get so wrapped up with the idea, well, Willie Mullins dominates. Actually, what he's doing on the flat in a sole entity is very, very impressive, in the consistency as well.
And often with horses like Ethical Diamond, who've been racing over hurdles all winter and spring as well.
I mean, there's some way of campaigning. And, you know, Kevin Morley, we see all the trends, and sort of the trends before Royal Ascot, you know, three out of five winners now won a maiden hurdle somewhere, you know, second at Wexford. Oh, that's really good Royal Ascot for me. Completely blows the minds of trends. But Ethical Diamond will win plenty of races. But look, the man is a genius at these big handicaps, and as Liam says, it sets the precedent for the jump seeds, doesn't it? He's still going.
He definitely is. PB for Ethical Diamond. Liam should say as well, PB for Never So Brave on the same day. First running of the City of York Stakes as a Group 1. Huge effort by York to get it up to Group 1 standard. They managed it for this year's renewal. Race at one point looked like it might fall apart this year, did just the opposite because Rosalian came into it. In the end, he's underperformed. Never So Brave hasn't.
No, absolutely. And I think it's just another, yet again, another improver that come from Sir Michael Stout. Andrew Balding has done a tremendous job with this horse. Obviously, it's climbing the ladder, you know, so quickly. And now to get that first top level success for Andrew as well, fantastic achievement for the whole team. One thing I did like, I seen on social media over the weekend, was the reaction that Never So Brave got when returning back to Kingsclear. A lot of the Andrew Balding Kingsclear team were outside the local pub and cheering the horse home, you know, late in the evening. So fantastic to see. Because there is so many people involved, it's not just a trainer and a jockey and a horse. There's so many people behind the scenes, and just going back to why the reason we're here today is people get to see how many people are behind the scenes at a yard. So it was great to see Never So Brave do that and go and do that for Andrew Bowling, who's having a tremendous season. On Rosalian, very underperformed. We don't know the full reasoning behind it yet, whether it was just one of those days at the office. I'm sure there'll be plenty to speak to Richard Hannon about. Not quite the matchup we thought we were going to get, but a worthy winner, nevertheless.
Yeah, Rizalian was disappointing.
Yes, he was disappointed. So I'm distracted. It's all events here. You can't complain. We're right in the centre of it. We literally are.
The horses, dogs, people.
Everything. Great to see. I'm running out of sort of reasons to keep following Rizalian. I've been a bit of a fan. I thought, okay, today's the day, and it's just not quite happened for him. It clearly wasn't right at York. That was well below the best. But there's still time. There's still plenty of races before the end of the season. I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back and to form, because we know he's an absolute top-notch horse on his day. But yeah, Never So Brave. I mean, it's a great achievement from the Balding, you know, from the Balding yard, because he's improved so much this season. I don't think anyone was. I wasn't quite expecting him to improve that much, but great for them. And as you said at the top, fantastic for York to have this Group One. There was a bit of pressure, I'm sure, on the entries as to how good this race was going to look. It looked a Group One race on paper.
Yeah.
And great for York and great for British racing that's got this 7 furlong Group One, because it was the obvious missing part of the flat season.
One sad proscript, very sad proscript to Never So Brave success. Bruce Raymond, who has been the long-time racing manager to Never So Brave's owner Syed Sahail, having also carried out that role for many other leading owners, many of them connected to the late Maktoum, Al Maktoum. Sadly, Bruce died yesterday. He was a jockey who rode for very many years with considerable success, had one of his biggest days here at Epsom just behind us when he won the Coronation Cup in 1982 on Easter Sun. Subsequently, to say, he was a racing manager for a number of leading owners, and he was an absolute gentleman, one of the very nicest, most decent people you could meet, and we send our condolences to all his loved ones. So this place today is a buzzing hive of activity as it's National Racehorse Week. It continues during the week, guys. Wednesday's a big event in Chester City Centre, where Great British Racing is bringing racing into the city. Lots more stables due to open. You mentioned Lee and Nicky Henderson, Ollie Murphy's opening his doors, others around the country too. Most events now, due to the popularity of National Racehorse Week, most places will have been taken, but there will still be spots available, guys, so people need to go on to the National Racehorse Week website and get themselves booked up.
Be quick. We're giving it a great advertisement here. You can literally see what's going on with all the horses around us, and dogs running past. It's great. It's fascinating to see what happens behind the scenes, whether you're a big fan of a sport or very new to it.
Yes, and you'll be at Nicky's place?
I will be there on Thursday at Seven Barrows, and just alluding to the point James made, it just shows you how close we can get up to these stars. So definitely check out the National Racehorse Week website. There will be some places still available, but it's an opportunity not to be missed, really.
Absolutely. Well, thanks to James, thanks to Liam, thanks most importantly for George Baker for inviting us into Downs House today. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll be back at HQ next week. Until then, bye-bye.